Good morning. Welcome in McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. It is Thursday, December 2nd. We're rolling into championship weekend. Glad you're with us. Listen online, jocksfm.com. The app's in your app store, iPhone, Android. You can search for it there and listen on the go. Tell your home smart speaker to enable the Jock skill or listen to Jocks, and you can listen to us that way also. Nice show for you coming up today. Aaron Taylor, former Notre Dame great, is going to join us at 8 a.m. this morning. He'll be on the call for the Conference USA championship game Friday night as well. So we'll talk to him about Notre Dame coaching news and then the first championship game of the weekend as it's set to kick first. We'll discuss that with Aaron also. Rubik's Cube is going to be 8:30 today. The computers will decide who will win this weekend. Wim Sanderson, the coach, at 9, and then Bruce Feldman, more coaching news updates from him at 9:30. Oklahoma still searching for a coach. GMAC, it does not appear as though Notre Dame will be any longer. Some Notre Dame fans pretty happy with the news that Marcus Freeman is going to be announced as their next head football coach, but also that Tommy Reese will stay on as offensive coordinator. It feels like, yes, you go young with Freeman, you lose a little bit of experience going with Freeman, but the core nucleus of that group feels like it's going to be there and feels like it's going to be intact for this Notre Dame football team moving forward.
And that's a pretty good spot to be in. I mean, when you look at where Notre Dame is, they obviously have something, and I recognized this a couple years ago. First time I was around Marcus Freeman, thought to myself, this guy's a star. Great, this was 2 years ago. It was the year that they went to Memphis, had to play in Memphis in back-to-back games. They played the final game of the regular season, then went back the following week, played in the AAC championship game. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I'm impressed with Denbrock, the offensive coordinator. I really like Luke Fickell, have liked him for a long time, have been friends with him for quite a while. But this defensive coordinator, who I knew nothing about, he was 33 years old at the time, I kept thinking to myself, this guy's a star. He had a presence. He obviously had a player's mentality. And then also, he just had a very gravitating personality. I walked out of the room after having met with him thinking, I can run through a brick wall today. Now, all that being said, is he prepared to be the head coach at a top 10 job? I can't answer that right now. I don't know. He might have to learn on the fly a little bit. And there might be some mistakes along the way. Not all that dissimilar to what Kirby Smart has had to endure during his tenure. Recruiting's been great. They've had great production, but there have been some gaffes on game day. Those are the things that he'll probably have to iron out with his coaching process. But is a guy, I call him a young man because he feels young. You know, he feels really young. But this is a guy that I think is bound for superstardom in the profession. And obviously those that have been around him recognize that as well.
Well, and some folks are bringing that up. Some folks are bringing up his age and saying, oh, is this a concern? Should this be a concern? You know, should we be worried about this? And it's not. I mean, he by head coaching standards, first time head coaching standards, maybe a little bit young. I think that's fair, but I don't know if it's something that would lead me to say that I don't think it's going to allow him to be successful, or it's going to change my mind as to what kind of coach I think he can be. When you've got the experience that he does, I think that can trump that at times. 35 years old, but you look at Dabo Swinney, he was 39 when he took over at Clemson. Lincoln was 33 when he took over at Oklahoma. Ryan Day, 39 when he took over at Ohio State. If he understands how to manage things and he's got a good staff, which it already appears as though he's going to, just because he's going to be able to retain multiple assistants that have been there for a while, Tommy Reese being the big one that's first in line that's going to stay there, then that's going to give him a big leg up to be able to overcome that, even if it was going to be an obstacle. But as you said, Greg, as impressive of a human being that he is, I think his maturity and his understanding of how things operate, that will allow him to overcome that, even if it was any sort of potential concern.
Yeah, and who cares? I mean, the good will outweigh the bad. For instance, do people still hang the fake punt call over Kirby Smart's head? Yes, but ultimately, is his job any less secure because of it? No, because he's putting forth an incredible product. And okay, yes, there's been one mistake, or two, or three, or four. Who cares? It doesn't matter. Because ultimately, the talent on the roster has this team and the program competing for championships. So you take the good in with the bad. You establish loyalty with a guy, take a chance on a guy. He's going to reciprocate that loyalty, hopefully, especially given what just transpired. The only job he'd probably leave Notre Dame for would be Ohio State, which is his alma mater. So I would take the chance right now. Lock him up, have him there for hopefully 30 years, and he'll win you a bunch of championships along the way. I mean, I'm telling you, this guy's unbelievable. Have you been around him?
I have not. No,
he is
not
awesome.
Had a chance to be around him.
You would love him. He is awesome. And it, like, couldn't be cooler. Has a really unique story. So his family, he's half Korean and half black, and he is just fascinating as he relates to guys in different cultures. And it's just, he can connect with everybody. He is just the coolest guy. I'm telling you, there's only a couple coordinators I've ever walked out and said, dude, I love that guy. Marcus Freeman was one of them. And I think how he can relate to different people, because he's had so many different life experiences, has been really valuable. Dude, this is a guy that was sleeping on Luke Fickell's couch 3 years ago. I mean, like, has experienced the highest of the highs, the lowest of the lows, and can relate to everybody and meet them where they are. And that's why I think you recruit so incredibly well. And the other guys that I've had this experience with walking out are Dan Lanning at Georgia, who I'm like, that guy is going to do something big in this profession. I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be something huge at some point or another. Another guy was Jimbo Fisher, who, as a coordinator at Florida State, I thought to myself, like, this guy's the real deal. I mean, I just think he's something special. I don't know what is going to come of his run here at Florida State, but he's special in my experiences with him. So there's just a few guys that you can just tell are just different and special and just cut from a different cloth. He's one of them. And I admire Notre Dame for acknowledging that and think they've hit an absolute home run. The world might not know it yet, but this is a home run. It's just, there might be a couple growing pains along the way that you're going to have to live with, like you would with any first-time head coach at a big-time program.
No, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And we'll continue, obviously, discussing it, what it means, what it is. Posted to Twitter yesterday, offensive coordinator Tommy Rees addressed the team as to what his future would look like as a part of the Notre Dame staff.
It's on Twitter, and I just wanted to tell you guys that in person. Okay? And I love you guys. I love this place. I believe that we can win a national championship here. And I'm committed to doing everything we can to get to that point. I know it's been a hell of a week for you guys. It's been a hell of a week for a lot of us that are part of this place. But this is where my heart is. My heart's with you guys. I care too much to leave this place. This is where I want to be. This is where I want to win a national championship. And I want to be able to tell you guys in person. And I know Twitter and all that happens, but I wanted to be able to get in front of you, tell you guys that, so you guys knew it. Now, some of you might be happy, some of you might be pissed. I don't know. I guess how you say it. The most important thing to me was that you guys heard from me up front and that you guys had confidence in me going forward. Okay? I can't tell you guys anything else about what's going on. That's all I can tell you. But I appreciate you guys coming in on short notice. We have work to do this year. We got a lot ahead of us. And for the guys that are coming back, let's go win a national championship here at Notre Dame. Everybody good?
Sure.
I can't answer any questions or else I would. All right, guys? But I love you guys. This is where I want to be. And let's go win it all. Cool?
So that just released yesterday via social media, offensive coordinator Tommy Rees discussing, you know, his plans to stay there in South Bend, which there are a lot of different ways you can spin this and look at this. And I understand that there are folks that their feelings are a little bit disrupted right now, and they're going to use this as an immediate shot at Brian Kelly. Do I think he was trying to steal some of these guys, take him to LSU? Yes. Do I think that there's a part of him that anticipated he wouldn't get many of them? Probably. But Notre Dame run game coordinator, running back coach Lance Taylor is also going to stay at Notre Dame. Now, you also look at a guy like Mike Elston, who coached with Kelly for a long time, back to his Central Michigan days. He is going to stay, defensive line coach, and strength coach Matt Bayless is also going to stay there at Notre Dame. So not just Tommy Rees, but now your D-line coach, your run game quarter running back coach, your strength coach, all feel like that they are going to be sticking around there at Notre Dame. From what I'm told in here, Jeff Quinn, the offensive line coach, most likely going to stick around as well. So there's no better way for a new head coach to start, Greg, than to have continuity on staff that was there previously and be able to push that into the new regime. Just makes everything less complicated. It makes the expectation the same across the board. The understanding of one another is already there. And there's just so much new that does not have to take place. There's so much of a learning curve that does not have to happen when you have that many assistants that you already know and have relationships with that are going to stay on your staff.
Well, I saw something, and I don't recall this. Obviously, this was long before my time. But I actually saw something online yesterday that said Nick Saban, when he took the LSU job, gosh, 20 years ago, 21 years ago, whatever year it was, late 90s, early 2000s, 2000, I don't remember, whenever it was. Whenever he took that job, he sent a plane back to Lansing, Michigan to pick up his assistants, and nobody got on. Not because they were, you know, basically sending a message to Nick Saban. It's just they weren't sure if that was the direction they wanted to go. So what did he do? He just put together a staff that consisted of a bunch of guys that went on to become superstars in the profession. And I'm not that concerned about being able to bring your whole staff. If you have something good going, you don't want to mess with happy. And if there's one thing I know about the SEC, and all you have to do is look at the decision Lincoln Riley made, the more information I gather on that, the reason why he's at SC is he didn't want to endure the meat grinder that was the SEC each and every Saturday. And I think a lot of the coaches on that staff at Notre Dame are probably sitting there thinking to themselves, man, I don't know if I'm wanting to go out and compete on the recruiting trail. I don't know if I'm wanting to go out and grind the way you're expected to grind in this conference in order to be successful. It's a whole heck of a lot easier to put your head on the pillow every Saturday night playing Notre Dame's schedule than it is putting your head on the schedule, putting your head on the pillow having played LSU's schedule with the expectations that LSU has. So I think a lot of those guys probably said, I don't want to mess with happy, and I like the situation that we're in, and I'm not sure I want to upset the apple cart. So can't say it's that surprising, but I also think Brian Kelly will put together a fantastic staff depending on, regardless of how many guys from Notre Dame decide to take the trip with him.
Yeah, and I've actually heard the story multiple times from multiple people, and I think we're to a point now where, especially somebody like you, if you could ever get Nick Saban in a sit-down scenario, could ask him, you know, hey, we see all this coaching turnover. Did that really happen for you? How did that go down? I would love to hear his sort of side of the story as to exactly how that happened. But if you did spin it forward, Jimbo Fisher, Kirby Smart, Mel Tucker, Will Muschamp, Damian Craig, Bobby Williams. Those were all guys that were somehow, some way affiliated with his staff at LSU, amongst many others, by the way, Rick Trickett being one, that were all a part of Nick Saban's staff there at LSU. So didn't really stop him, didn't really slow him down. So, but if you're a Notre Dame fan, you got to feel good. You got to feel good that, I mean, this is a guy that Notre Dame didn't come out a couple of years ago and publicly say this will be the next head coach at Notre Dame. But in my opinion, with the way that they stated some things and the buzz that was around it, they did everything but come out and say it to let everyone know that Marcus Freeman is going to be the next head football coach whenever something happens. If Brian Kelly goes for a while and retires, if he takes another job, if you know he has to step down, whatever it is, this is our next guy. And that's why we're putting him in the position that we are. So that's a win from the administration standpoint when you had that understanding that he was going to do it anyway. And then to be able to retain the staff that it looks like they're going to be able to retain, that's a power move for Notre Dame moving forward. And the wild part about this, Greg, is this is a team, not too many things. I mean, there's only a couple teams that would have to slip up this weekend. They could be in the playoff.
Yeah.
Playoffs. Playoff.
And you so, didn't do that on purpose, but it happened that way. Sometimes
how wild would it be for Marcus Freeman's first game as head football coach to be a college football playoff semifinal game? I mean, just unbelievable. And, you know, a lot of folks that root for Notre Dame that are Notre Dame fans and alumni are excited about it. And I think you should be. And I don't think that means there's anything wrong with Brian Kelly either. You know, and there's folks in the media that are going to take their shots about, you know, classless loser, the way that he leaves. I don't know how some of these other people leave jobs all the time or how they think that it works. I mean, I don't know. Is there like a 1 month cooling off period where you need to walk around and pat everybody on the rear end and tell them you're walking out? I mean, I don't understand. But, you know, Brian Kelly's now the head coach at LSU. And if you're an LSU fan, there are certain things that he has said since he's taken over that I feel you should be excited about. One being what you just brought up a little bit earlier, Greg, and that is the challenge of where he's heading next and wanting to be a part of that.
Look, I came down here because I wanted to be with the best. The resources here are outstanding. It starts with the alignment, excellence, the standard of expectation. You're looked at in terms of championships here, and I want that. I want to be under the bright lights. I want to be on the Broadway stage. That's what my passion is. And so, yeah, that's part of the draw. There's no doubt about that.
And so that's the part that I think you're excited about if you're an LSU fan, is that this is someone that sprinted towards the pressure, that sprinted towards the meat grinder, that wanted every bit of what it was going to be living, breathing, potentially dying in the SEC West. And Brian Kelly wanted it, and he's being upfront about it. And I think he knows the challenges that are going to come with it. And that's the kind of coach that I would want to hear from at my school if you were coming in to this conference in that division at that school with those expectations, taking them head on and understanding exactly what was going to be expected of you, because it's not going to be 7, 8, 9 wins every year.
But I also think, too, the goal is simple for Brian Kelly. A lot of places can say, hey, I want to win 10 games a year. Hey, we want to put together a program that can contend for a championship. No, it's not. There's no such thing as contending. There is one reason why Brian Kelly's in Baton Rouge. It's because the path to a national championship is easier, as crazy as that may sound, at LSU than it is at Notre Dame. Now, you're going to say, well, how does that possible? LSU's made the playoff once. Notre Dame's been in the playoff a handful of seasons. That's fine. Making the playoffs, one thing. Winning the playoff is something totally different. And I think that Brian Kelly understands that the type of talent that he can recruit and the type of player that he can have throughout his roster at Notre Dame can't compete alongside that of the teams that are winning championships. The Georgias, the Alabama. I know Georgia hasn't won one, but they've had the roster to be able to. The Alabamas, the Ohio States, the potentially the Michigans this year. The, you know, goodness gracious. I mean, a handful of other teams. Clemson, of course. So I think that's what he recognizes, that it's going to be easier to attract them to a place like LSU. I have them in my own backyard, and I'm going to be able to get a roster that can beat the best. Whereas I need the stars to align at Notre Dame for us to have a roster that can beat those level teams, those caliber teams on consecutive weeks to win a national championship. So it's obviously a leap of faith completely, because he's leaving a dang good situation. But he's also betting on the opportunity, the fact that he's going to now go to a place that's a little bit more attractive to the highest level of recruit. And we'll see whether or not it works out for him. But anything short of a championship at LSU for Brian Kelly is going to be deemed a failure. You hear me when I say that. Les Miles won one. He can't coach his way out of a wet paper bag. Okay, Ed Ogeron won one, caught lightning in a bottle. In 2019, had an incredible roster, had a great young coordinator, and had a quarterback that was one of the best we've seen in the modern-day college era. Okay, anything short of a national championship is a failure for Brian Kelly. So the stakes are high, but That's what he said. He's embracing that opportunity, is he not, Cole?
No, absolutely. And I think if you're an LSU fan, you're excited about that because you're going to have the pool to be able to bring in big-time assistants regardless of whether they're following you from Notre Dame or you're going out and getting them on your own. And you know, he talked about some of the reasons why he wanted to leave and that some of that could have been struggles in the playoff, administrative. Why Brian Kelly decided to exit Notre Dame?
Yeah, again, I think, you know, there was no plan in place as I entered the 2021 season that I was, you know, looking for another opportunity. I had a great football team that we were developing. But, you know, when you get an opportunity to talk to Scott Woodward and he presents a clear vision of the plan here and the opportunity, it was an exciting vision for me to look at. And as I got a chance to, you know, speak to more people about this opportunity, I just felt it was something that I had to take on. And when I talked to the boss, who's sitting in the front row there, and she was part of that decision-making process, there was no turning back.
Sometimes I wonder what those conversations are like when the wife gets involved. Because I think about my wife, and it's like if we were the head coach at Notre Dame and we were thinking about taking USC or LSU, like what would be at the top of her list? Like what would be at the top of your wife's priority list if you were going from one head coaching job to the other? The first thing you say is,
schools.
You know those days where it was snowing for four yeah. straight days, those weeks,
when
it was
gray for
it was
four
in the
straight
teens.
Months.
We're going to get away from that. And then the counter would have to be, yeah, you've seen the humidity, right? It's 199 humidity heat index down
right.
there.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a real thing, or do you think they're just kind of making that up? Like, no, it's going to be hot. We're going to sweat a lot. It's just walking to our car. But, like, is it shopping? Is it real estate? Schools? Is it good when you brought up?
Shopping,
like,
really?
What?
Goodness
they have
gracious.
A good bridge club? Like, is there
yeah,
a,
that's
is
big.
There a
bridge
country
is
club,
big. Bridge
country club,
club
membership? Like, what are we, like, what's the... What are the must-haves when the wife steps in and says, okay, we're going to take this job over that job? I mean, family nearby? Is it?
For
Lincoln, I get it. I go to my wife and I say, you realize we can use that jet as much as we want.
that's an easy one.
Guys, if you listen to the show, trust me, I'm going to keep going back to that. That is not something I'm getting away from.
I don't know why that's so mind-blowing.
Honey, I know the folks are still in Decatur. We can take that jet on a Wednesday morning, have dinner Wednesday night, and fly back right. and be home by the time the kids are awake the next day. So because I haven't seen
really,
unlimited.
What would be most important to Kat? Like, all seriousness, what would be most important? Proximity to family?
Yeah, probably, honestly. I don't think she would want to get too far away from her family.
And that's in Decatur.
Correct. Yep.
Yes. So you could take Vandy, North Alabama, UAB, and Jack State. That's all you got. Take your pick, pal.
It's a quick little drive over to the Mississippi schools from there. I think those two would be on the table. Memphis maybe be on the table.
Oxford probably would be. That's a pretty straight shot.
She's big. She loves Oxford too. That'd be a home run for her. Yeah,
yeah.
She would love
Oxford. Would be a good one.
She'd be good. Auburn wouldn't be too far. She'd always be a fan of that one. So
that's where you belong.
Going home. Going back home.
Going home. Even though they took my Auburn card, I'm getting it back.
That one doesn't pretty much work out. So, yeah.
Honestly, I'm trying to think of where – I mean, Meredith would probably – I mean, the schools would be of the utmost importance. With our kids' age, you know, what's the schools like? Where – you know, what part – what else is around? Is it a nice community? You know, are people into it? I think would matter to her, but not to the point in which they're harassing her at the grocery store because we didn't go for it on fourth down. Like, I do think that there'd be some of that.
So you wouldn't be going to the SEC is what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, you could. You just have to go to Vanderbilt. That would be, you know,
easy to get lost there. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Where they're more concerned about, you know, whether or not Kenny Chesney's going to drive by at any given moment than they are about any football game that's going on, including one involving the AFC leading Titans right now. So I don't really Honestly, I think it'd be a really difficult conversation to have with your wife and really with your kids. I think it'd be really hard to be a coach's kid to have to bounce around. I mean, almost impossible. And to have to make new friends. It's no different than that of those in our armed services and Air Force brats and Army brats and those that bounce around. It's just, it's hard on the kids. But I do think that there is a quality of life that we have in the South that a lot of people look down their nose at in some ways. But it's a pretty special place to live. It's this morning I went running at 4:55 a.m., shirt off and shorts. It was 50 degrees December 2nd. So, there's something to be said about
the lifestyle. Are you humble bragging more about the fact that you didn't have a shirt on or the fact that
you actually
got up and
ran
at 5 a.m.?
I couldn't sleep. It was a matter of not being able to sleep. So, it wasn't like a humble brag at all. It was like, I might as well knock this out now so I don't have to do it later. But the high is 71 degrees here today. I mean, they haven't seen 71 degrees up north in how long? It's been a minute. There's probably something about that weather
September.
To me. Maybe it's the California in me, but the weather to me matters. Big time matters.
Well, and all that stuff's a factor, but then you also turn to my wife and say, honey, you've got an accounting degree. Let's just start adding up the zeros at this place.
Whoa.
If it's one of those Brian Kelly contracts.
Yeah, but you don't like talking about local state income taxes. You don't like talking about that, even though you bust on Landrum for his taxes.
Not when I have the jet every year.
Those are not deductible. You can't deduct going to see your family in Decatur for you're paying for that some way, somehow.
You want to fly to Scottsdale for dinner one night? You want to fly to Vegas for dinner one night? You want to go to San Francisco for dinner one night? Sure. Wait, you know what? We'll do it the next three nights because we got the jet all we want. And I'm going to burn gas out of that thing like your heart's never going to desire again. We are going to run it into the ground. They're going to need new tires on that thing. We're going to be on the runway and down off the runway so much. So if you want new tires, why not get in on a new vehicle? Royal Automotive, always your place to do that. But things are a little bit different this time of year. How about putting a smile on a child's face by supporting Children's of Alabama and the Sugar Plum Shop, a program for patients and families who spend their holidays at the hospital? Drop off a new unwrapped toy donation at Royal Automotive before December 14th. Now, Royal Automotive has four dealerships conveniently located where I-65 meets Highway 31 in Vestavia. If you're looking for options and vehicles to choose from, Royal's got those. New vehicles being delivered daily. Royal has a massive selection of pre-owned vehicles. Royal's the only place in Alabama where you can find GMC Acadia, GMC Yukon, Volkswagen Atlas, Buick Enclave, Volvo XC90, XC60, and so many more options right there at one location. Royal Automotive pre-owned, Royal Buick GMC, Royal Volkswagen, and Volvo Cars of Vestavia Hills, all a part of the Royal Automotive family of stores. And Royal makes getting behind the wheel of a new vehicle easier than ever. Royal Automotive, exit 252 or I-65 meets Highway 31 in Vestavia, online at royalautomotive.net. Part of the SEC championship game that we sort of touched on yesterday that I want to dive into a little bit more today. There is a false narrative that a lot of people throw out concerning individuals on defense when they play at a certain place. I'm going to tell you what it is and why it might not be applicable for Alabama this weekend next on McElroy and Kubik in the Morning. Welcome back in. McElroy and Kubik in the Morning, 7:33 a.m. Jocks 94.5, listen online, jocksfm.com. Oftentimes, Greg, there's a narrative when you have a player like Will Anderson that I find very entertaining that folks will discuss as to how that individual should be handled. And I think this could go back to Myles Garrett at Texas A&M. It could go back to any elite edge defender, Carl Lawson at Auburn, D Ford at Auburn, whoever you want to come up with around the SEC, the way that Michael Clemens is maybe playing this year at Texas A&M, Alex Brown when he was at Florida, and that is just run right at him. And everybody always believes just run right at him, and then that's going to solve all your problems.
Both and have tackles that are also big.
Look how big. I think that it's one of those misnomers within all of football, but especially in college football that I've heard over the last few years as to, well, this was a simple solution for how to handle that guy. And as we begin to dissect sort of the other side, we definitely spent more time yesterday talking about Alabama's offense and what seems to be the impossible task of dealing with Georgia's defense. But The more interesting conversation is how could Alabama's defense maybe give Georgia's offense some headaches, because that feels more realistic and it feels like there are more avenues potentially that Alabama would be able to do that. Will Anderson's going to be a big part of that conversation. Running right at Will Anderson is not going to work. I don't care if it's a zone scheme where everybody's kind of taking that step to the right or to the left, and you're going to try to block space and utilize multiple bodies to sort of get a push on him, maybe have him flow where you can cut back in front of him, and especially not gap scheme runs where you're going to block down and pull somebody towards Will Anderson. I think that's one of his better attributes, is actually taking on pullers and the physicality in which he does it, and makes life very difficult to be able to get those runs going. So I do not believe that Georgia's answer for Will Anderson will be just run right at him. And it's as simple as that, and that's how they will neutralize number 31. I do believe that will be a big problem for a couple of reasons. It hasn't really mattered which tackle has lined up over Will Anderson. He's been successful the entire season. So regardless of whether Warren McClendon was playing great ball or not, I don't think that's a matchup that's going to benefit Georgia. The other part of the problem is, in my opinion, if there is a weak link up front for the Georgia offensive line, I think it's right guard in Warren Erickson, a guy who was supposed to start out playing center this year. He had the hand injury, and then as he came back, they had to shuffle some pieces around, and now Matt Luke's got him playing right guard. Now, a lot of folks will say, Will Anderson doesn't line up as a D tackle. He's not lined up over the guard, but he lives there a lot because Pete Golding's going to slant him inside, and Pete Golding's going to loop him around. And if he's the penetrator or the loop man on games and stunts that Alabama runs often, Will Anderson ends up over the right guard a lot of times. I feel like Will Anderson plays the right defensive end, if you're talking about it from the offensive line's perspective, more so than the left, but he will play both. That, to me, is a potential problem for Georgia. Now, how do you offset it? I think Georgia does have the luxury of three guys that could potentially help make that easier. Darnell Washington, John Fitzpatrick, and Brock Bowers. They have bigger bodies that are very capable of physically being able to help at the point of attack at the line of scrimmage, especially Fitzpatrick and Washington. Bowers, not as physical, not as much of a blocker, not saying he won't do it, not willing, but the other two are definitely, Fitzpatrick is maybe the most underrated player on Georgia's football team. What he does in the run game, how he helps in the run game, nobody ever talks about it, nobody ever mentions it, but he is a guy that does a lot for that football team. And they're averaging over 200 yards a game on the ground. He's a big part of it. And he was banged up earlier in the season, but he's going now. So I think when we start to break down that side of the ball, obviously 31 is going to be a big portion of the conversation. And it's interesting to me that there are some parts of that Georgia offense that are not going to be ready to handle it. And then there are some parts that maybe could help them go the extra mile to be able to handle it.
How concerned should Georgia fans be about the fact that Jamari Sellier is probably not going to be available?
He's your most
do we even know that? I mean, because I feel like everyone's saying he's not up, but I don't know that for certain. I don't know if anyone's confirmed, nor
I haven't seen confirmation. Yeah, I haven't seen confirmation that he won't go. He brings a lot of experience. He's your most experienced offensive lineman. But, you know, is he an Evan Neal? Is he a Kenyon Green? Is he a Quentin Nelson? Is he an Orlando Pace? He's not a difference maker up front, in my opinion. I think he's a good offensive lineman. I think he does good things, but I think they've had to move guys around enough this year that they should be able to offset that. The problem might come is that I think Georgia might have the luxury of just being able to avoid Will Anderson, or at least attempting to, as in sprint away from him, run outside inside zone away from him, run toss away from him, just because I don't feel like Georgia's going to have the pressure to score as much in this game as Alabama's going to. So if they just maybe go against what their normal game plan would be, where they would run it, how they would run it, they could still be okay. Well, if you're doing that most of the time, now you're going to be doing it towards an offensive lineman that doesn't have the same kind of experience there. That could work against you a little bit. I also think, you know, playing against 48 and 47 for Alabama, Young looked really good against Auburn. Now, he's been a guy that's flashed. He's looked great at times. He's disappeared at times. Mathis has been pretty steady. So those two down inside, I think, could be an issue if you're talking about playing somebody new inside with your opposite guard already not playing at a high level, at least in my opinion. So all those things could be problematic. And this is why I wanted to get in this conversation, because I do think that that's the part of this game that a lot of folks are failing to discuss, and that is, how problematic do we believe Alabama's defense could be for the Georgia offense?
Well, I think that both defenses are a problem. And when I look at Alabama's defense, while they're not as good as what they've once been, I actually think they match up pretty well against Georgia. For instance, there's not a receiver that strikes a whole lot of fear for me, a la a Treylon Burks, who in a one-on-one matchup against Job can have his way. There's not a threat or an element of tempo like Tennessee can throw at you where they can catch you in misalignment. There's not the element of outrageous quarterback run. There is somewhat of an element of that because Stetson Bennett is capable with the ball in his hands, but it's not like there's Jalen Hurts back there running around and it's going to be able to power through players if given the opportunity to run the football. There hasn't really been a whole lot of real consistent dominance along the line of scrimmage against quality defensive lines. Now, is Alabama the GOAT, the 2016 Alabama version or the 2015 Alabama version? No, they're not. But they're closer to that than, say, most of the teams that Georgia's played. The biggest thing for Alabama is I think they're going to have to force a turnover or two, because I'm not super convinced that their offensive line is going to be able to hold up throughout the course of the game. So Will Anderson in a one-on-one, when he gets them, if Georgia allows that to happen, he's got to make his presence felt. Strip sack, early, force the ball out of Stetson Bennett's hands early, negative plays to get them off schedule. I think Alabama's going to have to make a play or two in special teams, which they've done in this matchup in the past. So this offense, if I'm Pete Golding and if I'm Alabama, this offense doesn't really scare me. I think they're fine and they're solid, but they're the beneficiary of getting the short field an awful lot and just pouring it on people in bunches. The Florida game, other games in which, gosh, it's a six-point game. The next thing you know, you blink your eyes a couple times. Now they have a 21-point lead, and it's all she wrote. So I think that Bama actually matches up pretty well defensively, which is why I think this is going to be an extremely low-scoring game and why I think that every possession could potentially matter.
It's going to be fun if that's the case, I think. Be a competitive game.
Do you
game.
See it being super low scoring? I don't see how it doesn't.
I do think the under is the play, yes.
I wasn't necessarily leading to that. But, yeah, if you want to take it that way. Well, the under at 50 or 49 and a half, that's what, that was my pick on Daily Wager yesterday as the bet of the week. I just don't see either one of these offensive coordinators or either one of these head coaches saying, hey, offense, go be aggressive. Go take chances, because one mistake can flip this thing very quickly, especially if you're Alabama, given how Georgia's played and really capitalized this year on sudden change and mistakes by the opposing offense.
Oh, we've seen this matchup in this setting, how big momentum can be and how quickly it can switch and flip and what that can do to an opposition. So I think that's going to be a big part of it. And like you said, usually when you're playing that kind of a game, you go into it and you're not overly aggressive on offense. So that's the kind of game I'd love to see. I would love to see a competitive game where the two offenses are kind of having to figure some different things out and try to grind out some points. Defense is playing well. I mean, I'm a little old school, but I would love to see that game and be it competitive for four quarters Saturday afternoon. If you're looking to see the game in a little bit more clearly, well, our friends at Michelson Laser Vision can help you do that. I called Dr. Mark Michelson at 205-969-8100 over 20 years ago. I was tired of the glasses, the cases, the contacts, the solution. I had depended on those for so long, and it was just over it. Went and had my free consultation, told me I was a candidate for the LASIK procedure, decided to have it done. Dr. Mark Michelson performed my LASIK procedure. He was the first in the state of Alabama to do that. And now I feel like I have perfect vision still almost 25 years later, thanks to Dr. Mark Michelson. He and Dr. Jennifer Michelson are located right there at UAB Highlands for comfortable and convenient care. There's a variety of easy and affordable payment plans available for you if you do become a candidate for the LASIK procedure. You can return to your daily activities in just 24 hours. So eliminate that dependence on glasses or contacts. There are free screenings and consultations available with no obligation. Just visit MichelsonLaserVision.com for more information or call 205-969-8100 like I did for a free consultation. All right, you want to be a part of the show, 800-239-9569. You can do that. Tweet in at Mac and Cube. We'll continue a little bit more SEC championship game conversation throughout the show today, but there was some other college football news that I need to get to when we come back on the other side. We know the portal never closes. Some big names there, some big names leaving for the draft. And then in 15 minutes, we talk Notre Dame with Aaron Taylor, Conference USA Championship game, college football playoff as well with the Notre Dame great. Be back with more next right here on Mac and Cube in the morning. Welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. SEC Championship game coming up Saturday. It was a pretty good night for SEC hoops last night. We kind of lightly mentioned it with Tom Hart yesterday, exactly what was going on in the league, and he was calling one of those games, which ended up being maybe one of the biggest for the SEC last night, as the Georgia Bulldogs take out number 18 Memphis, 82-79 last night. Now, Florida did go down to Oklahoma, 74-67. Arkansas smashed Central Arkansas, 97-60. Nice win for Auburn at home. Pretty cool environment last night. Walker Kessler was great again, 17-14 for him. 85-68, they take out UCF. Coastal took out South Carolina, and LSU knocked off the Ohio Bobcats, 66-51. Some other news kind of floating around the SEC. DeMarvin Leal announces yesterday, Greg, he's going to take his talents to the NFL. No real big surprise here. Just a versatile defensive end, defensive tackle. I think he's a perfect 3-4 end. I think if you wanted a hybrid 4-3 defensive tackle, kind of in that Aaron Donald mold, a little bit lighter. I'm not making the comp. I'm not saying Leal will be Aaron Donald, but if you did want to go a little bit lighter down inside, Leal can handle himself there. But young man's going to make himself a lot of money in the NFL. He announces that he is leaving Texas A&M.
No surprise there. Had a great year, has had a great career, and will likely be a very, very wealthy individual here very, very soon.
So that's a little bit of news out of the SEC. Some other guys that have entered the portal out of the SEC, Nasir Watkins, Kentucky offensive lineman, he's in the portal. FIU transfer offensive lineman Miles Frazier picked up an Auburn offer. So Auburn looking to replace a couple of the portal entries that they've had. Ole Miss tight end DeMarcus Thomas, he's in the portal. And then you talked yesterday about how many more quarterbacks are going to be going in. An interesting name that I saw yesterday, Greg, that's in the portal, Jack Sears, a Southern California signee who transferred to Boise. And he is now back in the portal after passing for just 374 yards and 3 touchdowns this past season.
Yeah, and he, I don't know where he's going to end up, but he's a guy that has played a decent amount of football. So probably going to be an attractive guy, even though he's really a one and done, though. That's the only thing is talking to some of the coaches, now with the freedom of transfer, a lot of the coaches are no longer interested in one-year rentals. They're more looking for the guy, say, hey, he's got 3 years to play two or 4 years to play three. That's where the portal has really changed things, and really the recency has changed things, because it used to be, hey, man, we'll borrow one. We'll recruit a kid from high school, give him a year to learn under a veteran, and then it's his show from that point forward. There's not a lot of coaches that are taking that avenue anymore. They're saying, hey, man, go give me a guy with a lot of eligibility left, and he can be my guy for the foreseeable future. So the younger you are entering the portal, the more attractive you become naturally, and it might disrupt what you have going on in your room right now, but it's something that a lot of these coaches, the risk that they're willing to take.
Those rosters are changing all the time, kind of like the constant changes in the weather. And those changes push your HVAC system to the limit. Protect it with a checkup from a Trane Comfort Specialist. Gives you peace of mind through the cold weather. Trane is the official partner at Jocks. So find a comfort specialist near you at Trane.com. Like we always say, it's hard to stop a Trane. Talk some Notre Dame with one of the best offensive linemen to ever put that uniform on. Aaron Taylor going to join us on the other side of the break. He's also going to be on the call for a Conference USA title game coming up Friday night. Get his thoughts on that and just the college football playoff. Who he anticipates after this weekend to be the four teams that are going to get in. We might even mention a little Joe Moore Award, even though McElroy's not going to like that. So
here we go.
O-line talk, Notre Dame talk. College football talk with Aaron Taylor, the great, next, right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.